in high definition, or standard definition if you like, delivered on iTunes Podcast, or on another podcast app called Podomatic. You're listening to Jamie Way, Matt Olson, and Adam Drummond on The 5 o'clock Wave.
Oh, don't you just love that intro? It's really starting to grow on me. G'day, everyone. This is Mo Schmolson here, at Mo Schmolson on Twitter, by the way. I've changed my handle at the request of our thousands of listeners out there. So this week we've got a little bit of a special edition of the show. You may have noticed that, or may have remembered that Adam mentioned he had had a chat with Australian comedian actor Lawrence Mooney, and we're now going to play that for you. It's a wonderful interview. It gives a real insight into Lawrence. It's very funny. Adam is, as usual, charming, and he really shows off the Parkinson in him, his inner Parkinson. And we think you're going to enjoy it. So let's just get into it, shall we? And this is episode 17, by request, our interview with Lawrence Mooney.
And I'm always excited when I've got somebody on the show who I admire, and I've admired this bloke for, he doesn't even know it, but I've admired you for a long time. You recognise him from ABC2's Dirty Laundry Live. It is Lawrence Mooney. Thanks for being on the show, mate.
It's a pleasure, Adam. It's nice to be in Wagga Wagga.
Yeah, you're doing your stand-up show, which is called Stupid Liar, and mate, congratulations. Fantastic show. We went to it last night, my wife and I. She has not laughed that hard since she first saw me naked.
Right.
Which was more an awkward laugh than anything else. But she was just in hysterics. We actually bumped heads, you know, going over and bumping heads while we were laughing so much. She enjoyed it.
That's very flattering.
And it was awesome. And the whole house loved it. And you're on tour at the moment with a young bloke called Harris Stuckey as well, which we'll interview Harris in a moment. But, mate, I do a bit of research when I have people on from TV. I dig up the stuff.
You're going to rattle some skeletons in my closet.
Don't know if it leads to that. What comes, what, you know, will be there. But I went into your career, and it's a checkered career before you got into stand-up. And these are the things that I came across. You were a window cleaner.
Yes, I was.
You tell me this is not true.
No, that is completely true. That was the last time I got my hands dirty in a job.
Right.
So that was 1998. I was a high-rise window cleaner.
Oh, there you go. That's when I graduated from something. Just to put it in perspective.
And then primary school.
Yep. And then you were a customs officer?
I was a customs officer prior to that. Straight out of school, I was a customs officer for 6 years. And two of those years, I was a drug detector dog handler.
Yeah.
And
is that when the drugs were at their worst or at their best in Australia coming into the country?
Are you talking about the quality?
Yeah, I don't know. Accessibility.
Part of some big busts. And I also worked with the Federal Police and Victoria Police. Yep. We were often seconded because they didn't have as big a drug detector dog unit as we did. Yeah. So we did some exciting, fun things like house busts and raids and things.
Oh, right. Adrenaline pumping.
But I've got to say, when people say, did you find drugs? I've found a lot more drugs as a comedian than I ever did as a customs officer.
Yeah, that's natural way of the world.
Yeah, people naturally declare to a comedian, I've got drugs.
That's exactly right. But that's probably not the most interesting thing I found on your CV. I looked at it and I went...
Gigolo?
Close. Did you put this on Wikipedia? Because that's what I was looking at. Wikipedia's great for research. No, you're a perfume salesman. Is that true?
Well, it is.
Right.
It is.
I can't imagine it.
But salesman's probably the wrong term. I was one of the perfume spray boys.
Oh.
They, you know, spray it on a card and hold it out
at
Meyer and David Jones. And that was,
You're the bait.
Yeah.
Because they get the young, good-looking guys.
That's right, in your T-shirt, you know, live jazz or Dune or your Christian Dior T-shirt. And I worked for a modelling agency. That's right, a modelling agency. And they used to hire us out to stores as spray boys.
Wow.
It was a really good way to meet girls.
I was going to say, is it a good pickup spot?
Because you just kind of mace them in the eyes, they're all disorientated. Hey!
And then you got them in the car. So that was your career. That was basically true.
It was an itinerant career as I was pursuing a showbiz career. So I was always wanting to act, and so I eventually went to the National Theatre Drama School in St Kilda.
Yes.
And whilst I was there, I stood up for the first time.
Wow. And how was that?
That was great. I was standing up, yes. I finally learned to walk.
You didn't do it in baby steps. Yeah.
No, I evolved. I was very much a simian child, getting around on all fours. And then I stood up. It's like
that
the
was
end
the
of
moment.
2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when I was on the evolutionary chart back behind Neanderthal Man. I stood up and it was like a duck to water, I've got to say.
Yeah,
the first
right.
stand-up gig I did, I felt very comfortable and I thought, this is it. And one of the great things that I got about stand-up, and maybe this is a little bit of a window into my megalomaniacal psyche, is that I realised I didn't have to share the glory with a cast.
Yeah.
I could just do it all myself.
Yep.
And,
yep.
you know, that's one of the great things about stand-up. You live and die on your own merits.
In the moment.
In the moment. And there's two results. They laugh or they don't.
Yep.
And so all the glory is yours or all the pain and suffering.
Yeah, it's just that step of getting up in front of the microphone. It's a fascinating process of having the guts to do it.
Yeah, it's just plunging into the unknown.
Do you still get nervous performing? Or is it now confidence that you've worked on the material, you know most of it's going to work?
Some gigs I get nervous where it's probably the comic agreement isn't in place. And by that I mean if somebody's coming along to see my show while I'm on tour, they've made an agreement, they've bought their ticket, I'm going to go and see Lawrence Mooney. And when Lawrence Mooney appears, it's like, great, here he is.
Yep.
But if you turn up at a corporate event people are eating lunch and... Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a little break now. And please welcome our comedian to the stage. It's like, what? What's he doing? What's that? You know, there's clinking cutlery.
Yeah, they were asked to come to this room because of the corporate nature of it.
And it takes a little bit of a while to switch into that headspace. And so I get nervous at those, properly nervous. But now I just look forward to being on stage.
Yeah.
I kind of relish it.
It's that the adrenaline, but you also obviously love the applause and the laughter still. It's that desire to be desired a little bit, isn't it? That's in a comedian or a performer psyche.
Absolutely. You know, there's a deep void inside me that the drugs and the strippers and the alcohol can't fill. And that's filled by the validation of complete strangers night after night. So, yeah, you're right.
How was it, because I know that as an Aussie comedian, you actually went quite far in the American competition. I think it was on NBC's Last Comic Standing.
That's right,
and you made it to the semi-final.
Yeah, we made it. There were three comedians from Australia that made it through to the final 30, Fiona O'Loughlin, Adam Vincent and myself. And then we all went off to LA to do the first final when they then... reduce it down to 10 competitors into the house together. And none of us got through, and it was a nice bit of kind of gallows humour at the end. We're all in this together. We could slag off the Americans and have a few beers and laugh at the process. But I think that NBC was probably a little ingenuous inviting Australians in the first place.
Okay.
I don't think that they intended for any of us to get
through.
There
wasn't a chance.
So we were four guys. We were patsies.
Yeah. And to put a bit of context into what you're doing now with Dirty Laundry Live, and Damien, did I send you a link of... the show? If it's okay with you, can I show a clip now of Dirty Laundry Live?
Absolutely. You can show as many as you like.
All right. Well, this is a particular one which I think works a little bit into your stand-up as well, so I thought it was relevant. Check this out on ABC2's Dirty Laundry Live with Lawrence Mooney. Dirty Laundry.
Marty, which international conflict broke out on Jennifer Aniston's leg this week?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
An international conflict broke out on her leg.
An international conflict? Mm. It's not the Cold War, because that's just started today.
It is a war.
It is a war?
It is. Is it... World War Knee.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
According to NW Magazine, Jennifer Aniston was very upset when they snapped this photo of her knee wrinkles, or, as NW have called them, ninkles.
That doesn't look good.
Look
there,
it's on the side. Just
are they naturally occurring ninkles?
I think
is that something?
It's just a bit of saggy skin there.
I think she was upset because she's like, God, I've been working in this industry making pretty funny stuff for... ever, and
That's the reward I get.
Yeah, Ninkles.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I don't believe
but
that.
I mean, 44.
No, but hold on a moment. She's got Ninkles, and it, and I don't think that we should be saying she hasn't got Ninkles.
Okay. can we have a look at the photo again?
Can we have a look at the Ninkles photo? Because sometimes
look, it's on the thigh. Those are Thinkles.
Yeah, you're right, son. Yeah. Honestly. Yeah, you're right. They're Thinkles.
Dr. Martin, you invented boots as well, didn't you?
I did. Those were mine. Yeah. So it's a knee with wrinkles and ninkles.
That's
week
right.
We saw your testinkles, I think. No, I was going to get through everybody, Pat.
I think what you saw was a bad case of scrinkles.
You can have them ironed out now.
Yeah, with some scrotox.
Yes. Yeah.
Scrotox. That is awesome work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You don't want to overuse scrotox. No,
because it just, wow. How long.
And you lose all the expression.
you lose the ability to scrotally emote.
Dirty laundry. Scrotox, hilarious. And don't we all have that problem? Someone once told me
we don't all have it.
Well, just, no, women don't have it. They've got something much worse.
They've got I suppose they've got it in their lives, a lot of women, but they haven't got it.
No, that's right. And if you want to describe it to a woman on what it's like to have a scrotum, someone once told me what you do is you straighten your arm out, and you've got this little... The crease there, it's very similar.
It's disturbingly similar. Such a terrible word.
Isn't it?
Scrotum. That is like, it's just a terrible, terrible word.
It instantly conjures up visuals as well.
Yeah, and powerful visuals.
Oh my God.
I'm scratching the table with anxiety.
I recently read a book, another comedian.
Good on you.
Thank you. So first one.
Dr. Zeus?
So we started at Dr. Zeus, Redfish. And then I evolved, and then right. I stood up. And I got onto a scared, weird little guy, Rusty Bertha, wrote this book called What and Give Up Showbiz. And I was put onto it by Damien Callinan, who used to work with many years ago.
I was in a duo with Damien, and we did three comedy festivals together. No, four.
Yeah, right.
And we were nominated for the Barry Award in 2002 for Proxy Heroes.
Wow.
And then we split up.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Is this
very,
now...
very nasty separation.
Oh, so this is awkward. Okay, we'll move on from that. Yeah. Sorry, Damien.
He's a real showbiz asshole.
He has got that reputation. Yeah. It's bizarre.
It's all about him.
But he's featured in this book as well, which is why it clearly put me onto it. You're in it almost more than any other comedian there. And I think it's because, ironically, you're on tour with This Stupid Lie, but you're quite honest about some of those horrendous moments that comedians go through that don't work. Two stories, I thought, as I'm reading it, I went, I bet you Lawrence can tell these stories even better than what you're imagining in your head. There's one where you hop in a taxi drunk with someone else.
With
and
Limo.
And the cabbie recognises you, but it's not... It wasn't actually you who it was thought you were.
He was... an Asian cabbie in Sydney, and English was his second language.
Mm.
Maybe he's third or fourth, but
who knows?
Yeah, he had a very strong accent, and he goes, "I know you, I know you." And I said, "He goes, you look like donut." And I said, "I'm sorry, do I look like a donut?" And he goes, "No, you look like donut." And so Limo's trying to figure out what he's saying, and he goes, "You know, John Howard's friend with the curly hair." Donna. And I went, Downer, Alexander Downer. He goes, yeah, you look like Downer. And Limo was just in the back of the cab in hysterics. And I just turned around and went, Jesus, that is the worst thing that anyone can say about anyone. I look like Alexander Downer.
No, worse is, and you sound like him.
Yeah.
That's worse. Yeah. You're the whole package.
Wow.
Which you don't.
No, I don't look at, he's... I must have been going through my chubby, curly hair phase.
That's terrific. The other story, which I just thought, imagine getting paid for a gig, and I think you got paid up front, so you're going to do the gig regardless, but then you realised it wasn't to a huge room full of people. It ended up being just two. Tell us the story about that dinner comic act that you did?
Yeah, so there was this fan that comes to a lot of comedy, and she said, I'd love you to perform at my boyfriend Dave's birthday. And I said, well, that's very flattering, but, you know... I was like, oh, I don't know, like, you know, a birthday? And she goes, yeah, I'll pay you. And I said, listen, you don't have to pay me. I'll do it for free, because they came to a lot of gigs and stuff.
Oh, okay, yep.
And she goes, no, I'll pay you $500. And I said, okay, just donate the $500 to charity.
That's nice.
And at the time, it was just after Black Saturday, so she gave it to the Bushfire Relief yep. Fund. And she said, we're going to be at this restaurant at such and such a time. And I said, all right, well, I'll arrive a little bit earlier. And I arrived at the restaurant thinking, you know, I'm going to be playing, you know, in a corner somewhere. And
yep.
I don't know, standing on a chair or whatever. I hadn't really spoken too much to her about the details. Rolled up the restaurant and it was just them sitting at a table.
The two of them. oh, my God.
And Dave's like, what are you doing here? And his girlfriend goes, surprise.
And she wanted you to do an act.
Well, no, she didn't. I said, do you want me to do material? And they'd seen my act a lot, so yeah. They knew most of it.
How visual it gets.
So they just wanted me to sit down and have dinner with them.
Oh, that's nice.
And so we had lobster.
Yeah.
And I cracked wise and hung a bit of shit on Dave.
Is this a regular thing that you go, well, that was a nice experience. I'm actually going to hire myself out for dinners and just sit with couples and have lobster.
Yeah, it was probably not as awkward as you would imagine.
Yeah, right.
At first I thought, oh, this is terrible, but they're lovely people and I was invited along and we did some greater good. And
I'd pay at least $500 to go out for dinner with you and my wife.
I'll come and dine with you if you give $500 to charity.
Yeah.
$500. It's a lot of money.
It's good. It was good. So it was a win-win-win.
Yeah.
Three-way win.
It's a three-way win.
I
got a little bit sweaty then just thinking about it because as I realised it was only the two of them, I just went, oh, no.
Yeah.
It's going to be some kind of weird menage a trois.
And it didn't lead to that.
Well, I was disappointed that it didn't lead to that. I felt a little bit ripped off.
Now, you've done a lot of radio, TV. It's not like you're an overnight success. It was a long haul, wasn't it, to kind of get to that point where you're hosting your own show?
Yeah, well, I think I'm a lesson for anyone who's thinking about giving up.
Yeah.
Because I was given my own show at the tender age of 48.
Exactly, yeah.
And I started stand-up late. So I've been doing it for 20 years. I started when I was 29.
Yep.
And I had a bit of, you know, life experience and also stagecraft, having gone to the National Theatre. So I was ready.
Yep.
And yeah, it hasn't been, you know, drudgery. I've had a lot of kind of good gigs along the way.
Mm.
You know, I was sidekick to Denise Drysdale on the Denise show for a couple of years, and I've done some commercial radio, and then I worked on Postcards and Channel 9. So I've had, you know, a bit of fun and variation along the way, but I'd always wanted to host my own show.
Yep.
And was given the opportunity after the ABC kind of fell in love with me a little bit through the Agony series.
Yes.
Adam Zwar and Highwire have created an amazing series with Agony Aunts and Uncles,
That's
Agony
right.
of the Mind, Agony of Modern Manners, Agony of Christmas, Agony
Beautifully
of Life.
Shot and great. Edited and very
with your very good friend Tim Ross.
Rosso's in it,
And you do a great Tim Ross impersonation. Have you ever given the Wagga Wagga TV? Come on.
No way. And the funny thing is that, and I've never done it in front of him either, but he's heard that I do him. And one night...
I'll do my Shane Bourne for you if you do your Rosso. We're joined with Tim Ross. Oh, thrill seekers, here we go. This is fantastic. Thank God you're here.
Oh, jeez, you're good. It's like sitting next to him.
Tell us about that time you went to the pizza shop in Wagga. Ow!
So much pressure. Rosso explains that he came to Wagga, and when I first met him, he said, I've been to Wagga. I went to a place called La Paqueta, and La Paqueta... We ordered a pizza, and the pizza came out. The waiter came over to us and said, sorry, we're out of cheese. I'm like, you need two ingredients, cheese and dough, and you're out of it. That's my experience of Wagga. Not deep enough at the moment. He's got a lot more resonance in his voice, but when he gets to a certain pissy stage, he starts doing this a lot.
Yeah, a little bit indignant.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he does it on the Agnew series too, I've noticed. Yeah.
He checks himself because he knows he's about to unleash.
He looks into a spot and he goes, should I say this? Yes.
Yep.
And then he lets it out.
Up and to the left.
Now, I've got a quick quiz for you, mate.
Oh.
Because I like to finish on a quiz.
We're winding up already.
But unless there's anything else that you'd like to talk about. Have you got something you'd like to plug?
Well, I am doing two more dates. One in Queensland, one in Darwin.
What are their names?
Brisbane and Darwin. They're great girls.
That is very unlike you to keep this clean. I know you push boundaries all the time. You're known for it in the comic world.
And so Lawrence Mooney's The Stupid Light. Tickets still available on Ticketek if you're watching in Brisbane or Darwin. And tonight we're in Canberra. And like I said, I'm travelling with Harris Stuckey, who's been at it for about 3 years. He was born when I started doing stand-up. He was born in 94, so it's kind
of a nice little reality, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow,
well, we'll find out a little bit more. Exactly, we'll find out a little bit more about Harris in a moment. So here's the quiz. Now, you've got five questions which you've got to answer in 50 seconds.
Rightio.
That's what the quiz is called. Okay, are you ready?
What a catchy name.
What a creative title.
Five answers in 50 seconds.
Yep, and it's even got here, creative title. I was tired. Anyway, right. The questions are, number one, what's the number one thing that you hate in the world?
You would think I'd be saying ISIS or the Islamic
or
Jihad.
Or something.
But it's just like, people going too slowly.
In general, in the car in front of you?
In general, get out of the way. Walking, don't stop in doorways. Indicate and move out
You're
of the
right.
way.
If for me...
Let's
move on. It's people with trolleys. Oh, I shouldn't have brought this up because we're going to talk about it later, but trolleys in aisles of supermarkets and you just need to get around to the
spatial awareness.
Beans. Yeah, yeah. And they've got no idea that you're wanting to come. So I love it.
Sounds selfish, but anyway.
That's, go.
That's
how it is.
Come
Two,
on.
If you had a chance to sit down to dinner with one famous dead person, presuming they're alive, who would it be?
One famous dead person, Jack Kerouac. Author of On the Road.
Oh, right, okay.
The father of the Beat Generation.
Oh, there you go. You know, most people would say Elvis or someone like that, and you've mentioned someone I haven't heard of. Number three, what's your most irritating habit that drives other people nuts?
Oh, a bit gobby.
You give it a bit too
mouthy,
much.
Yeah.
Number four, what, in your opinion, is the best invention in the world?
The flushing toilet.
Oh, mine's so close. It's toilet paper.
I would say that you can push a button and that is gone from your house.
Yes.
Whatever that is. That once upon a time, bucket. That was in your house or a bucket or some kind of cesspit or whatever.
Yep.
The fact that you can push a button and that's somebody else's issue now.
It is.
That's gone.
And you used to have to carry it out into the laneways. We've got all these laneways in Wagga and they were actually not garbage collection. It was your food
thunder
collection.
Box.
Your Thunderbox.
I would say very close second is the hot water heater. The fact you can turn the tap on and hot water comes out. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes.
And I don't reckon humanity's come very far from those two great inventions.
Yeah.
The flushing toilet and the hot water heater, long time ago. What if we... this?
Yeah.
Who needs this?
I know. Especially when I'm down to 8%.
I would sacrifice any kind of telecommunications for flushing toilet and the hot water
system.
Just
convenience in a bathroom, really, isn't it? That's all you want.
All about the bathroom.
Now, if someone...
I'm very Roman.
This is the last question. If someone was going to portray you in a film about your life, who do you think would play the part of you? Keeping in mind that Alexander Downer does not have any acting ability.
Well, later on in life, of course, Russell Crowe would be playing.
Yes, he would.
Yeah, but he'd be playing me like this. G'day, folks. I'm Lawrence Mooney. Yeah. He'd make me a lot more manly and hard.
And intense.
What are you looking at? This is Wagga Wagga TV. And
nice
what I say...
Right there too, for later.
What I say will echo throughout eternity.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. And see you next time. Thanks, mate.
Cheers. Thanks, Adam.
Good stuff. For Russell Crowe and got mistaken for him recently when the Rabbitohs won. And somebody down the street said to him, "Hey, mate." And he goes, "What?" And he said, "Rabbitohs, finally." He just kept on walking. And then I was showing my kids a picture of you and I last night. And the four-year-old says, "Oh, that's Tim Rosso."
Yeah, I sometimes get mistaken for Rosso.
Yeah.
And so somewhere back you know, we lived in the same family tree.
Yeah, have to be.
Yeah.
So,
there's
mate,
some kind of Celtic root there.
That's it. You've also got a DVD. I said I was going to give a plug about your DVD because we bought it last night.
And Lawrence, it's available on iTunes. Lawrence of Suburbia. And it was a show that went to air on the ABC on Comedy Warehouse, or Warehouse Comedy, rather.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's me in a nutshell.